you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
A very good Saturday to you. This is the weekend edition of the LA Report. I'm Julia Paskin, and coming up after the headlines, the trendy Chinese fashion giant Shein is expanding in Los Angeles, but many are concerned about its environmental impact and the treatment of its workers. Then in our latest installment of How to LA, we'll take you on a tour of Fairfax, considered one of the oldest and newest neighborhoods in Los Angeles. You'll find out just what we mean by that. And later on, stick around for our own John Horn's preview of the Sundance Film Festival, which is back in person after going virtual for the past 2 years. First, let's get to the news. Policies that helped LA renters during the pandemic are going away at the end of the month, but new rules are taking their place. KPCC housing reporter David Wagner has details on a big vote out of yesterday's LA City Council meeting.
The LA Council approved a host of new protections meant to keep renters housed once pandemic rules expire. They voted for new limits on eviction for nearly 400,000 households across the city. They also passed relocation assistance for tenants hit by large rent hikes. Another change will allow tenants to fall behind by about 1 month's worth of rent before landlords can evict them. Councilmember Nithya Raman says it was a big day for renters' rights.
It will be a big change for the city of LA in terms of expanding tenant protections, and it's something that I think we can all be proud of.
The vote came after dozens of tenants spoke in support of new protections, while landlords called in their opposition. LA has had some of the longest-lasting protections in the nation. Covering housing, I'm David Wagner.
The LA City Council approved $50 million to be spent towards Mayor Karen Bass's homelessness initiative. Controller Kenneth Mejia will track how that money is spent. He says his office will show up-to-date information on a website that tracks the city's ability to combat homelessness.
Our work will help shine a light on the resources available and what is lacking, including monitoring the trajectories of unhoused community members from interim to permanent housing.
4 years after the FBI raided the office and home of Jose Huizar, the former council member has entered a plea in federal court. KPCC's Austin Cross has more.
The disgraced lawmaker pleaded guilty to racketeering and tax evasion. Prosecutors accused him of running a pay-to-play scheme that paid him $1.5 million in bribes and other perks in exchange for his influence over development projects. Prosecutors are recommending Huizar serve 13 years in prison. He's agreed to a sentence of no less than 9. And the feds say Huizar could pay a fine of nearly $2 million. He's set to be sentenced on April 3rd. I'm Austin Cross.
A lot of snow in our local mountains from the recent storms, and that means hiking conditions are extra dangerous. There's a higher risk of avalanches, snowslides, and slippery ice. Natalie Brechtel owns Gutsy Journey, which coaches people to get outside in the mountains. She says the first step to safe hiking is awareness.
We're basically unconsciously having knowledge gaps. So it's not that people aren't pursuing the knowledge that they should have. They don't even know that they need to learn about it.
She suggests taking the time to learn about snow conditions before going out to hike and avoid snowy hikes for 3 days after a storm system. And remember, trails in places such as Mount Baldy require special ice climbing equipment and training. Currently, two hikers, including actor Julian Sands, went missing from Mount Baldy about a week ago. They still have not been found. Vice President Kamala Harris toured the Tujunga Spreading Grounds in Sun Valley yesterday to highlight over $12 billion in federal money approved for Western water projects. The site captures stormwater and replenishes the groundwater supply, one of many throughout LA County. In other news, the Dodgers have a new voice. Steven Nelson will be a play-by-play announcer, the only Asian American to have that job in Major League Baseball. KPCC's Josie Huang has more.
Rodriguez goes, Kelnick sends one to right center field. That one's gone!
You'll be hearing more of that voice soon. This upcoming season, Nelson will call more than 50 games at home and on the road for the Dodgers.
When it became official, just the release, the happy tears, it's been something that I'll cherish forever.
Nelson is leaving the MLB Network for the Dodgers and will pinch hit for the team's lead announcer, Joe Davis, who also is the main baseball play-by-play voice for Fox Sports. It's a homecoming for Nelson, who grew up in Huntington Beach. As a fourth-generation Japanese-American, Nelson says he's eager to bring diversity to the announcer's booth.
Ultimately, my goal in this industry is to further pave the way for people that look like us to find futures in sport.
Piece of trivia about Nelson, he grew up loving his dad's team, the White Sox. Otherwise, he says he's Dodger blue all the way. I'm Josie Huang.
Meanwhile, half a dozen Regal theaters in Southern California are set to close as the chain makes concessions in bankruptcy court. Three L.A. and Orange County area theaters are included in the list, including the Sherman Oaks Galleria 16, Metropoint in Costa Mesa, and the Yorba Linda IMAX. Cineworld, the chain's parent company, plans to shut down about 40 theaters across the country starting next month. Homesteading trends have picked up speed in recent years, and folks went extra DIY during the height of the pandemic. And now, with the price of eggs going up, raising your own chickens may seem like the perfect complement to your sourdough starter or vegetable garden. So for some guidance for those considering a backyard roost, we're joined by someone who knows a lot about poultry. Maurice Petesky teaches veterinary medicine at UC Davis. Maurice, welcome to Weekend Edition.
Great. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
First, can you give us a little background on why the price of eggs has just gone up so much?
Yeah, so we're dealing with kind of a poultry pandemic, if you will, in the sense that instead of, you know, Ebola or COVID, we're having this highly pathogenic avian influenza outbreak, and we're kind of at an unprecedented state. Over the last year, we've had over 50 million birds that have had to be euthanized as a result of highly pathogenic avian influenza. So we're dealing with a reduced amount of supply and the same amount of demand, obviously, or increased demand in some cases. We're also dealing with a lot of volatility in feed prices, specifically corn and soy, related to things like climate change, the war in Ukraine. California is kind of in a unique situation in that we have very specific rules on how we raise our laying hens. So because of those rules, we have a reduced supply in a sense. In addition, states like Colorado and Washington are also implementing similar rules.
Gotcha. Okay. So in the face of all of this, for people that are thinking about starting to raise their own chickens for the first time, what kind of things should they be considering in deciding if they can even do that safely?
Raising backyard chickens can be somewhat challenging and somewhat easy all at the same time. Birds are relatively kind of independent, but when we raise them in an urban environment, it's important to realize that they can be carriers of disease, for example, so that the same highly pathogenic avian influenza that's affecting these large commercial flocks can affect these backyard flocks. Salmonella and other diseases can move their way into the flock and cause problems not only in the birds, but cause food safety challenges. So it becomes really important to raise the birds in such a way that you're reducing these kind of risks. And that involves a lot of good husbandry, a lot of good planning, and some deliberate intention on the owner's side. But raising backyard birds can also be a little expensive. So when you try to pencil it out economically, as expensive as eggs are, feed costs also go up. So those two, unfortunately, go up at the same time, relatively so. You wouldn't do it for economic reasons. You would do it more just because you like chickens. They're interesting. You want to raise them for all the good reasons that people like backyard chickens.
Any additional advice? Because, you know, to your point, there was avian flu found in L.A., I think, for the first time in October of last year. So is it have to do with protecting your birds from wild birds?
Yeah. So the most important thing is when you're raising domestic poultry, the biggest challenge with respect to diseases is basically preventing your poultry from interacting with all kinds of wild animals, rodents, waterfowl. So it's really important to have good fencing. It's really important to make sure that you're picking up any spilled feed, because once you spill feed, that's when rodents and other animals are going to come into your coop, and that's how diseases get spread.
So your lab at UC Davis is studying avian influenza. Can you tell us a little bit about your work and what your team is looking at right now?
Yeah, so our lab focuses on remote sensing of waterfowl in close proximity to commercial poultry. So we're really keen to kind of advise the poultry industry across the U.S. about where and when waterfowl are in greatest abundance around their farms. If waterfowl are the primary reservoir of avian influenza, understanding when and where those waterfowl are relative to your farm is going to be one of the important things you should consider when focusing on biosecurity, basically preventing those waterfowl from getting close to your domestic poultry.
That's UC Davis veterinary medicine professor Maurice Pateski talking about some of the practical sides of raising chickens at home and the avian influenza. Thanks so much for being with us and for giving us some good advice.
Great. Thank you very much.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
Welcome back to the LA Report. I'm Julia Paskin. One of the world's fast fashion giants is expanding in Los Angeles. The Chinese brand Shein says it plans to grow its LA workforce to around 500. Fans love Shein's trendy, super cheap clothes, but the company's rise is also creating concerns about the environment and the treatment of workers. Our Asian Communities correspondent Josie Huang has the story.
Sounds like we're at a club, but no, it's the Montebello Mall. We're near the food court inside a pop-up opened by Shein. An eager crowd of mostly women wait behind rope barriers. Security guards let them through the doors a few dozen at a time. Asia Dizidor is in the next group. She's dressed almost entirely in Shein.
This whole outfit is from there, minus my shoes.
There's her color black turtleneck sweater, houndstooth check shorts, black tights, beige purse.
Yeah, I love this outfit. I just threw it together because my closet broke this morning, like the rack fell.
Normally, the only way to shop Shein is online. In 2022, its app was the most downloaded shopping app in the world. Eva Perez showed up with her teenage daughter to check out the goods IRL.
Even the jewelry, our phone accessories, kids' clothing, it's really good stuff.
Perez says she never breaks the bank, no matter how big her haul is.
I honestly question it all the time, like, how's it so cheap?
When you see the clothes are so cheap, it's not a good sign.
Tracy Tung runs the fashion sustainability program at Cal State Northridge. She says Shein relies on low-wage labor, egregiously low, according to different investigations that found Shein's suppliers in China made employees work 12-hour days or longer, with almost no days off. Tung says cost savings also come from using cheaper synthetic fabrics.
Polyester, nylon, spandex are really just like plastic. When you put it in the landfill, they won't degrade. It's not like cotton.
Shein, of course, is not the only fast fashion company with controversial manufacturing practices, but its turbocharged climb to industry leader creates anxiety in fashion manufacturing hubs like LA. Marissa Nuncio of the Garment Workers Center says a player like Shein forces other brands to lower prices.
What happens is that creates a downward pressure in the supply chain in terms of contractors or factories negotiating and bidding and trying to be the lowest bid.
Which means less pay for workers. Shein's rise coincides with efforts to raise wages for garment workers in the U.S. A year-old California law requires suppliers to pay workers by the hour rather than by the garment. Some local manufacturers complain this is driving up their costs, making it harder to compete in a market dominated by the Sheins of the world. Again, Marissa Nuncio.
If fashion brands can go elsewhere and pay the lowest cost, that's absolutely going to have a ripple effect here.
With all this backlash, Shein is trying to remake its image. It says it's putting millions of dollars into improving factory conditions, and it's reducing the use of plastics in packaging. It's touting job creation. The company says it plans to add to the 200-person-strong staff at its LA offices, and more will be hired at a distribution center opening in the area this year. And lately, it's been trying to connect with locals. Last fall, Shein unveiled a mural project in El Monte featuring Latino artists. Months later, came the pop-up in Montebello for fans like Asia Dizidor.
The best thing about this is that they give you free returns, because I wouldn't buy so much stuff if I wasn't. It was so easy to take back.
Our conversation turned to how Shein's clothes were so affordable and the low-wage workers who sew the garments.
I guess that's not really good. I didn't think about it like that.
But soon the line to enter the pop-up starts to move forward. Beyond the doors awaited cream-colored shoulder bags and neon green sweater crop tops, no more than $10 apiece. I'm Josie Huang.
For its first episode of the new year, our colleagues at How to LA went back to their roots, exploring the city's many neighborhoods. This week, they checked out Fairfax, one of the oldest and newest neighborhoods in LA. From Cantor's Deli and a handful of remaining Judaica stores to Rip and Dip and Supreme, it's one of those neighborhoods that's got something for everyone. So here's host Brian De Los Santos as How to LA listener Patrick Vukovic takes him on a tour of the district and its history.
From Elias Studios, this is How to LA. I'm Brian De Los Santos. Today, we're kicking off the new year by getting back to our roots.
When I first moved here, it was full of Judaica stores, which have since turned over multiple times.
That's right. We're exploring LA's neighborhoods.
It's like very interactive, people coming in and out of storefronts, super pedestrian friendly.
This time, we're in Fairfax, one of the oldest and newest neighborhoods in LA. And we've got a real neighborhood pro to show us around.
I'm Patrick Vukovic. I've lived in the Fairfax District for 17 and a half years. It's my favorite part of town, not just because I live here, but because it represents so much about LA and its history.
Fairfax is one of those neighborhoods that represents something different for everybody.
Skate culture, street style, sneakerheads, hipster eateries like Prime Pizza, Sweet Chick, Kofax Coffee, which has the best breakfast burritos. And then there's Supreme, which was really the big change in the neighborhood that brought in all the new apparel stores.
You've got Rip and Dip, Golf from Tyler the Creator, and other hype PC stores where people wait all night in line to grab new releases.
Then you have like the old standards, like Cantor's. They have been able to bridge so many iterations of this neighborhood.
So, Patrick's taking us through this neighborhood and its history, telling us all about the best and worst parts of Fairfax.
Here's the worst thing about my neighborhood. I live between two malls. The Grove on one end, the Beverly Center on the other. Weekends in December are traffic nightmares.
Okay, since you already kind of brought it up, let's go ahead and begin with Cantor's. Tell me all about the spot.
Yeah, it's a Jewish deli, though it's not the original location. Cantor started in Boyle Heights, then moved here with the movement of the Jewish population in LA. They are known for their food, for their baked goods, their pastrami, the cheese blintzes are my favorite thing in the morning. And then they have the kibitz room, their little music venue. It was like maybe on the way up to the Sunset Strip kind of a thing when the hair metal days were big. You know, even today, there are bands that are rocking the kibitz room.
Oh yeah, also wasn't Haim's first show at Kenner's? Okay, so anyway, I'm gonna need your pro tip for dining at Cantor's.
I am picky about one particular thing at Cantor's, which is I find the main dining room, the southernmost one, to be somewhat physically uncomfortable because of the fluorescent lights behind those weird tree-patterned panels. Whereas the northernmost dining room, which is very mid-century kind of googie architecture style, is really cool and has much more comfortable lighting. Very LA, glittery tabletops. Very, very cool.
There you have it. If you can swing it, sit in the northern room. Don't get me wrong, this is a very pedestrian-friendly strip. But let me make something clear. It is not fun to drive here.
It is two lanes in either direction, but there's no turn lane. So because of all the people pulling in and out of spots, it's a little bit of a traffic bottleneck. Now we're walking by Fairfax High School. Obviously a lot of the prime demographic for many of the retail shops here.
Yeah, I mean like these stores, I've seen dozens and dozens of people just like in line at places like Supreme or these other shops, trying to get inside on a Thursday morning or even on the weekend. It kind of defines a neighborhood in a way.
Yeah.
Now I gotta ask you, Do you shop here?
I don't feel cool enough to shop in any of the clothing stores on Fairfax. I'm not a skater, I'm not a sneakerhead. Thrift shopping, though, I do most of here. So there's like high-end thrift or vintage, and then there's the Goodwill, one block off Fairfax on Beverly. There's the Council Thrift Shop, and a few smaller ones where I found some really cool items.
All right, hold up. So what are you grabbing here at the thrift store?
I had a birthday party this year. The theme was the color of the year, which is hot pink, as determined by what people were wearing to the Met Gala.
I love that.
So like shopping for semi-novelty items like that.
Okay, it's cute. Maybe I guess we can hit the thrift store on our way out. But to be honest, I haven't eaten all day and I'm kind of hungry. Since you're the pro here, where are we going to go eat?
Well, okay, so aside from Kofax, which is currently closed because it's late afternoon, my next favorite place is John and Vinny's, which is pasta and pizza.
Oh, cool.
It has a little wine shop in the back. Ooh. It's hard to get in for dinner. Like, yeah. You have to plan ahead, but my highest recommendation is to actually go for breakfast.
Okay, more pro tips. I love that.
Oh, it's here. Smells so good. There's mozzarella. There's a bar looking at the pizza oven. People are chilling, drinking wine.
In the back wall is a little hot pink neon sign that says Helen's, which is the name of the wine store in the back.
It's color of the year.
Yep.
Hi, my name is Ivy, and I'll be your server today.
Something that should be noted is Ivy's shirt, which is John and Vinny's, but it's in, like, Hebrew-style font. So very much the character of the neighborhood with the Jewish history.
Love it.
And Italian colors.
Yeah. You're right. It is. I don't have anything to add to that, other than I'm required to wear the shirt. Have you dined with us before?
I haven't.
He's a local.
I have many times.
Amazing. Yeah. Welcome back. Welcome.
I have a question, though. Sure. Do you have a favorite pizza?
I do. The White Lightning I love because it's creamy. It's a white sauce. And then it has a little bit of a spice from the pickled jalapeno. The most popular pizza is the LA Woman. It's classic pizza sauce. And then when it comes out of the oven, the burrata is placed on top. So the burrata itself is cold.
White Lightning and an LA Woman.
While we're waiting for our food, I've got some more questions for Patrick. And a little warning here, we're getting into some very controversial territory.
So tell me more about the farmer's market, because it's a thing here in LA.
Yeah, the farmer's market, weirdly, I remember visiting when I first came to LA on a family vacation in 1987. It's a huge institution. It's a great place to visit for souvenirs, for all kinds of food. What I love about it compared to the mall next door, which is the Grove, is that there's tons of history in the photographs they put up. There's little history displays, like these kiosks about the development of this neighborhood, the development of Los Angeles. Unfortunately, it all comes from oil because it's the Gilmore family. But I love that they keep it looking the way it's always looked. And they have this embrace of how LA became what it is and sharing that with people in the display there. The opposite next door, the Grove, is designed to make you think you're on some like Parisian street and make you forget entirely that you're in LA. It's completely fake, all national brands. It's the freaking Cheesecake Factory. Like, get over it.
Okay, so this is no shade or anything, but since you're already a pro at everything we've been talking about, I want to hear about your pro tip about the farmer's market.
My secret about the farmer's market is the upstairs seating. Have you ever been?
No.
It's above the toy store, above Kip's Toyland. You can almost always find something. If you get a spot near the windows, you can people watch down below.
Oh.
Ooh, sorry. This is the White Lightning pizza.
Let's dig in. It's the cheese. It's the cheese. I love that jalapeno. And then what is this? These flakes?
More cheese.
More cheese.
There's at least three kinds of cheese on this. And I can't identify any of them.
Look, y'all, I know you can't taste this, but it was so delicious. You gotta take my word for it and maybe visit one day. All right, anyway, let's go on with the tour.
I'm gonna fucking passport with an Australian driver's license. You'd like to go and buy me a packet of gummies, I'll get you one too.
If I weren't in the middle of recording a podcast.
Oh, sorry, I didn't even realize.
That's okay. It's a small microphone.
Direction. Yeah. Sorry. No. I feel like an 18-year-old trying to score booze.
Y'all, this only happens in LA. Anyway, let's go on with the tour.
Now we're approaching a huge intersection. There's a gas station. There's a bank on one side. Right across is the historic Fairfax Theater, which only a year ago was finally given historic preservation status by the city of LA. But the developer who bought it years ago still is probably going to turn it into condos. I think we need housing in LA, so that's probably good. But there's probably an argument about the amount of traffic it will add to the area. Catty corner from the Fairfax Theater is CBS Television City, a windowless building surrounded by a parking lot, surrounded by a fence and a hedge, essentially impenetrable, completely unwelcoming. But on the other hand, it's very LA. They do have actually a lot of audience shows there, so it's something that somebody coming to LA would interact with. Yeah. I have special memories there because I went on The Price is Right once and won.
Oh, wow. You won. What did you win?
A storage shed, a queen-size bed and mattress set, a year's supply of Mylanta, 4 bicycles, a clawfoot bathtub, and a party boat.
You still have that boat?
The boat I sold to a guy who had just bought his first house on Toluca Lake. His name is Niall Niami. He's since got really huge into property development, and he most recently built The One, which is the largest house in California that he initially was going to sell for $500 million. And then the price kept going down and it eventually bankrupted him.
That sounds sad. It's very LA though.
Probably the most newsworthy event in my neighborhood 2.5 years ago now were the big protests following the killing of George Floyd. And there is a scar in the asphalt of one of the police cruisers that had been burnt out. I kind of like that it's still there because it just reminds me of like something really significant happened here. It's still fought over. It's still argued about. The problems underneath that still exist. And there it is. It's just like a weird stain on the road.
I know the exact photo you're talking about. I know a journalist friend who took it. And I'm just like, that was a moment in time that we didn't know where our history was moving toward, right? So thank you for sharing that. It was it's a moment.
Yeah, and it was an intense day to be just like at home, people running everywhere, people like trying to like bust open car windows, and then there would be like a woman just walking her dog.
Okay, one last pro tip before we go. We've been in all this commotion of cars and the bustle and hustle of LA. We're walking around. This is why I got here late. There's so much traffic. So what's the best way to get to this neighborhood?
The secret is to take Crescent Heights because Fairfax bottlenecks, La Cienega bottlenecks, La Brea has all the construction with the new metro. Forget about the major streets. Go up Crescent Heights, deal with the stop signs. It's faster, I promise.
I feel like your neighborhood friends might hate you for that, for like saying it on the podcast, but you know, thank you for sharing that.
This is the Council of Thrift Shop, or the National Council of Jewish Women Thrift Shop.
I actually have been wanting to go thrifting for a long time. Pick out something for each other. Let's see what happens.
This would go well with the color of the year theme.
Yeah. Alrighty, y'all. That's about all the time we've got for you today.
Yeah, I see a hot pink over there. That's a dress.
It won't surprise you, but most hot pink things are dresses.
Oh.
Special thanks to Patrick Vukovic for touring us around Fairfax today.
First of all, what do you think these are?
They're shorts. A skirt? They're shorts. Okay, they're shorts. They're kind of big.
They look like golf wear? Maybe? I don't know.
We'll be back on our normal schedule this week. We've got so many exciting stories to share with y'all in 2023. So you know what you gotta do. Subscribe to the show and leave us a review.
Oh, wow. This is something I would wear. The hot pink tank top.
The mesh poolside would be very hot in that hot pink. If it's a little chilly for the mesh, you know, just put on the pink under.
I love how you're giving me fashion hacks here.
Thrift exclusively. I could not piece this together at a normal store. Yeah.
At a Zara. All right, cool. Well, should we get this?
Don't forget to subscribe to our daily newsletter over on elias.com/howtola.
We like a bag.
Yes, please.
1093, thank you.
And finally, the Sundance Film Festival is finally back after the pandemic canceled the last two gatherings and turned them into virtual affairs. This year, though, audiences are back in person, and so is our Hollywood reporter, John Horn. This week, John sat with Morning Edition host Sharon McNary to give his take on what to expect at this year's festival. Here's their conversation.
Welcome, John.
Great to see you, Sharon.
Well, thank you. You don't look too bundled up right now, but I know you're off to the mountains of Utah, most probably not to ski in all that fresh powder. What else is happening in Park City?
Well, I am not going to ski. I remember a time when I was able to. It just so happens something's going on up there. I'm going to give you an audio hint.
Rows and flows of angel hair and ice cream castles in the air and feather canyons everywhere. I've looked at clouds that way.
I really need to compose myself for a second.
John, you're tearing up.
I am. Every time I see this scene or hear this performance, I start sobbing. It's a clip from Amelia Jones singing and also performing sign language for Joni Mitchell's Both Sides Now. It's from the movie Coda. You might recall that writer-director Sean Hader's film won a little prize about a year ago. It's called the Best Picture Oscar at the Academy Awards, but Coda also debuted at the Sundance Film Festival. And that's where I am headed. The festival runs from today to the following Sunday. And a very interesting footnote, Amelia Jones, the star of Coda, has not one but two movies that are going to premiere in Sundance.
Oh, wow. That sounds great. Now, this year's festival is in person, so it's the first time since January 2020. So audiences will finally be able to see Sundance movies in theaters rather than on their laptops. So is there a Sundance movie from last year's virtual festival that could do as well in this year's Oscars as Coda did from last year?
Probably not among narrative films, but there are several documentary features that premiered at Sundance a year ago that I think are very likely to be named when the Oscar nominations come out next Tuesday. Yes, next Tuesday, right around the corner. Those include Fire of Love, Descendant, and All That Breathes. So let's see if I'm right about those Sundance alumni being nominated for a documentary feature next week.
Well, it does lead to a lot of awards, but why else do you consider Sundance to be important?
Well, I think it's even more important now than it has been, given that smart adult dramas are dying a rapid death at the box office. And it's important not only to showcase the best work made outside the studio system, but also Sundance is there to make sure these films get an audience. Coda is a great example. So it went to the festival 2 years ago without a distributor. The movie could have played at Sundance and nowhere else. But of course it didn't, because it's really good. Apple TV Plus bought it for no small sum and released it. So more than anything else, Sundance is a very important market for independently produced films. And it's where movies like Little Miss Sunshine, The Big Sick, Napoleon Dynamite, Blair Witch Project, all premiered, went there without a distributor, were bought, and went on to greater glory.
What films are you excited to see this year?
It's a very long list, and it's very hard to pick, you know, where you're going to be at any given time, because you always have about four or five choices at the same moment. I'm interested in a dramatic competition film called Theater Camp from star, writer, and producer Ben Platt. I saw him on Broadway in Dear Evan Hansen. This is a pet project of his. There's a movie called Passages from a director I'm very fond of named Ira Sachs. A dramatic premiere called The Pod Generation, starring one of my favorite actors, Chiwetel Ejiofor. A documentary called Beyond Utopia, which follows families trying to flee North Korea. Flora and Son is a movie from John Carney. He made a film called Once, you might remember. And then a dramatic competition film named Jonathan Majors. You're going to hear a lot about Jonathan Majors coming up. And then a documentary about Cher Height, who wrote The Height Report, called The Disappearance of Cher Height. A very controversial book when it came out. And I think Cher Height was not remembered well by history, even though she made a very important contribution to women's sexuality.
Wow, that's just amazing. Well, that theater camp does sound like a lot of fun.
It's my kind of movie.
Thanks, John.
My pleasure, Sharon.
And just a reminder, you can listen and subscribe to Retake with John Horn at laist.com/retake or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening to the weekend edition of the LA Report. We'll be back tomorrow with more of what's happening around LA. Until then, enjoy your weekend and try to take it easy. I'm Julia Paskin.
This program is made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from Ciclavia, catalyzing vibrant public spaces, active transportation, and good health through car-free streets. Ciclavia promotes respect and infrastructure for bike and pedestrian-friendly public spaces. Enjoy these pop-up parks for the day in your favorite people-powered way. Jogging, biking, skating, strolling, or simply spectating. Free and open to all, Ciclavia Sundays generate miles of smiles in neighborhoods all over L.A. Details at www.ciclavia.org.